This is the Dignity Lab, a weekly podcast in which we share stories of dignity, its violations, and its reclamation. Your dignity is your inherent worth or value. Dignity is both essential and vulnerable to harm. The good news is that no matter who you are, no matter what has happened to you, no matter what you have done, you can reclaim your dignity. Tune in to hear stories of inspiration, healing, and leadership. Hosted by physician and leadership coach, Dr. Jennifer Griggs.
Hello and welcome to the Dignity Lab. It's hard to believe we're at the end of our first season. In this episode, Vanessa Aaron, our executive producer, and I are going to be discussing some of the key takeaways from season one, and we'll have some questions for you at the end. Hey, Vanessa, it's great to see you today.
Hey, Jennifer, same. It's great to be here.
Having been in some of these interviews and obviously listening to them all a few times through and producing the episodes, I'm wondering what stands out to you.
So many amazing things that were covered. The thing that really has struck me over the course of the season as we've been discussing this topic with our guests and that I've been learning along with our listeners is the fact that the inherent nature of dignity, the fact that we are born with dignity as our birthright, seems so simple. But the more you look at it, the more you start to investigate the different nuances of dignity and how it's applied to different people, it becomes really complex. You not only have your own dignity to think about, you have the dignity of others, you have all of the interactions in between once the first violation of dignity has occurred. The whole thing, you want it to be simple, but it's actually quite complex.
I love how you're saying that it's our own, it's another person, and then it's that space between the interactions, almost another person with its own dignity, right? Like our own, our relationships can have dignity.
Yes. And I think that kind of keys into, I think, the concept that Donna Hicks was talking about and the fact that it's universal. And so it's inherent in each of us, but that also means that it's that concept is applicable to everyone and to everything in different cultures and different places around.
I've been really struck by how many of the people we've had on talked about dignity as if it were a light switch. So Donna was sitting at a table. She described, I was sitting at these tables and recognizing that there'd been a violation of something. And she wanted to explore it as a feeling. And then she used the word trauma. And then finally, she struck upon dignity. None of us really discovers dignity, right? It's always there. We're born with it. It's inherent in the earth and animals and everything that's really can be seen and not seen. But it's almost like she discovered the concept of it. She said in episode two, and I wrote this down, I think what we stumbled upon here is a universal aspect of the human experience because the context might be different in these stories, but the emotional impact was the same. Do you remember that from episode two?
I do. And, you know, it reminds me because Ari, I think also when he was describing his journey with dignity, it came from a place he keyed into the history of the Ukraine when the conflict between Russia and the Ukraine happened. And for him, that was his moment and the revolution of dignity that he described. And he really keyed into the concept of revolution and dignity. And I think that that speaks to that light switch that you're mentioning and how sometimes just finding the words that we need to describe something as inherent as dignity, just having the word can be so helpful in flicking that switch.
Yeah, I was just thinking about Rachel Theon-Preyun, our guest in episode four, and she described how dignity is not stated explicitly in the organizational compassion literature, but when she talked with people about what they wanted at work, it was to be valued. And that's what dignity is. So the responses she was getting when she interviewed people in her research didn't change, but the way she was able to frame what people were talking about was their dignity, that feeling of being seen and valued. And then, of course, John Paul described his flicking of the dignity switch when he heard a conversation I had had and connected with me on LinkedIn. It's always there, but it needs to be uncovered or unearthed or like a light switch. I don't know. It feels there's something about it that's like a birth of dignity.
Well, and I think that's one of the things that I love so much about this kind of exploration is that there's a really good chance that we are all experiencing the same thing, in this case, dignity. We just need to decide on the language so that we recognize that this is something that all of us have.
Oh, I love that, that having a name for something and a common understanding of it. And also, would you say deeply knowing it and feeling it, like Fred described, realizing that dignity was his birthright? So it feels like we need to name it, and we also need to feel it.
Yeah, and I think that helps us better understand it and process it.
Donna Hicks, as she wrapped up her episode, when I asked her, what's your next big thing? She said she wanted to feel dignity, you know, embody it, and described her experiences and the fact that she's written two books, but then wanting to get sort of underneath so she could feel dignity, which is what you're describing, actually experiencing it.
Mm-hmm.
Have you noticed that it's so much easier when we think about the elements of dignity? So I'll go through those. Acceptance of identity, inclusion, safety, acknowledgement, understanding, recognition, fairness, being given the benefit of the doubt, autonomy, and accountability. That it's so much easier, at least for me, as I was talking with all these great guests we've had, how much easier it is to identify times our dignity has been violated as opposed to it being honored.
Oh, I find as I'm walking through life and listening to my friends tell me about their experiences that the benefit of the doubt and autonomy are just words that now come to mind constantly. I'm constantly thinking them.
Is that when people are describing something bad that happened to them or something good?
I'm typically sort of parceling out their conversations and when they're describing traumas in particular, so something bad, I think that for me, it seems like it's almost step one is to be able to easily recognize violations of dignity and the suffering that it causes before you can move into the space of knowing how to interact with that.
That makes sense. And I also think we're sort of wired to be alert to threats to our dignity. So dignity is really tender and vulnerable. And maybe that is what makes us so alert to those violations. And it keeps us safe.
Recognition of the violations of dignity? Mm-hmm. Yes. And associating the words with it, I think, for people who aren't used to recognizing violations of dignity, that's the first step. Once they have the words, once they start repeating them and hearing them in their own minds as they're listening to others speak, it becomes natural to think about it all the time and to recognize it more quickly when it does happen.
I'm laughing because I think about myself walking around with this enormous dignity lens in front of me. I can't see a movie or read a book or watch the news without going through, this is a violation of dignity and these are the elements that have been violated.
It's also so much fun, though, as you're doing that, to watch how people process that and how they start to heal and when they pull themselves out and become generous of spirit.
I think I mentioned in our very first episode that when I could name what had been hurt, what elements of dignity had been violated, that set me on the path to healing and eventually to forgiveness. So that's really resonating with me, what you're saying. You know, as we talk about dignity being tender or vulnerable, I remember Rachel saying in episode 4, we talk about how you reclaim your dignity and sometimes it feels as though that wound is never going to heal. These wounds can be so deep.
And for me, I think that that's often a manifestation of time. Like when the initial wound happens, it feels like the world is ending. It's just, there's no way I'm ever going to forgive that. There's no way that I ever want to interact with that in any space. I tend to flee or freeze. And so I want to push it away and hole myself into the ground. And then as time passes, it's almost like I had a cup that was full of violation of dignity. And as it starts to drain, I have more room for forgiveness. I have more room for processing. I have more room for reclaiming my dignity.
That makes me think of Anise, whose go-to strategy when her dignity is violated, she told us, is to hide and then to rage. I know that my go-to strategies are to seethe inside. Sometimes I indulge in righteous indignation, or I imagine taking revenge.
Oh, I give you the impression that I don't rage too.
Another thing that really struck me was how much we were talking about leadership. I think it makes sense when we're talking to leaders, but the intimate relationship between true leadership and honoring other people's dignity was in stark relief for me.
One of the things with leadership and culture that struck me right away when we started talking about that is that there seem to be cultures that strive towards honoring dignity and then cultures that don't prioritize that. There are many cultures, I think, many professions even, many structures within our social construct where violations of dignity have become the status quo. And so in order for us to be intentional about avoiding violations of dignity, we have to break the status quo, which is even harder.
We can get in these grooves where certain things are accepted.
Maybe it is. It's all cultures have a degree of that status quo within them. It's just in varying degrees. And so being careful to not accept the status quo, to look at dignity, to name dignity, I think is really important.
Oh, I love that. I'm going to think about that when we're done. Do you remember Madeline in episode 6? Madeline said, leaders do not have the privilege of not treating people with dignity and respect.
That is one of my favorite things that Madeline brought forward. Because in linking that to the status quos that we accept within culture, there are natural hierarchies. And people in leadership positions have more power. And with power comes certain responsibilities. And I agree with Madeline 100% that one of those responsibilities is being conscious and respectful of other people's dignity, more so than even more so, like it needs to be heightened because they are in a position of power. And it can be, I think, for leaders, sometimes because they are also human, it can be easy to forget that that power structure exists and that they need to be, if anything, more conscious of dignity.
And I think if we're not mindful about that and we don't see the role that we play, both positive and negative, it's really easy to sort of step in a dignity puddle.
A dignity puddle, I love that. I believe that within the realm of privilege, the privileged have a responsibility to recognize that violations of dignity are more easily recognized from a position of not having power, right? Those without power will feel those violations of dignity and have those violations of dignity more often.
I think those violations are amplified when there's a power imbalance. And I'm thinking not just about work now, but in the world.
Oh, I love the way that you said that it's amplified. That's a great way of putting that across.
And again, it can be for good or for ill.
Yep.
So I'm hearing you say leadership is both a privilege, and because of that privilege, everything they do is amplified.
Yes, because of power dynamics. Exactly. That's what I took away from a lot of our conversations.
Anise and Ari both talked about not needing to be perfect. I wrote this down too. Ari in episode 3 said, if we're honoring the humanity, then it means honoring our imperfections and our anxieties.
Oh, and see, that's where the complexity really comes back in for me, because even in the honoring of dignity and in the recognition of the violations of our own dignity, we are human. And we're not going to solve all of the world's crises, and we're never going to get rid of, eradicate all of the violations of dignities that we see because we are human and emotions come into play. So knowledge and understanding of these concepts doesn't take away the fact that we are emotional and fallible creatures.
Right. We get scared. We're tired. We can be angry because a boundary has been crossed or things didn't go the way we wanted and not be our best. And I love what Ari and Anise said, that we don't have to be perfect and we can be authentically ours without being a jerk.
Yes. And I think he also said something about if he treats everyone in ways that honor their own humanity, then if he lets them be real, then even if they don't agree, even if they can't come to a consensus, that they can't work together, it's still okay. And you can have disagreements or you can have different opinions on your perception of the reality and still coexist in a way that is respectful to one another.
And even part ways. Remember, he was talking about people no longer working at Zingerman's community of businesses, but it's the way we do that that can preserve our dignity and others.
And coming back to the emotional aspect for a second, one of the things that I personally have experienced is that when my emotions come into play, when I get too in the weeds, and then I find that in arguments, you're trading back and forth. Well, my dignity was violated here and my dignity was violated there. And the other person who may be using different words, but is essentially trying to tell you, yeah, but my dignity was violated here, and back and forth, back and forth. And coming out of that and remembering, and sometimes it for me, I have to actually take a step away and think, how do I want to show up in this world? Where do I want this conversation to go? And that's where Megan Albertson and her applause berries come into play for me, right? The idea that if you come into this work, because we have a tendency to focus on our violations of dignity, on the hurt that it causes us when we're in these situations, sometimes we lose sight of the overall goal.
I love that. I was kind of surprised how much love came up.
Me too. But pleasantly so.
I did ask Donna Higgs, what's the relationship between love and dignity? And she described, and I wrote this down, I wrote a lot of things down. Love is about being in a connection with someone else. It's a natural state that we are all born with. And that reminds me that we're all born with our dignity, right? So these two, if they're not identical, because we don't have to stay in relationship or connection with people if we decide we have to part ways, which I personally have had people I've had to part ways with, and I'm sure everybody listening to this has also, but that they can be side by side and that there's great overlap.
Oh, that's interesting, because so often when I'm telling people about friendships I've lost in my life or friendships that are on pause, I always say in the process of explaining how that friendship has taken a break that I still love that person. And I hadn't thought about the fact that that means that I'm still recognizing the inherent dignity in that person. No matter how our falling apart happened, I still love this person. That means that I still recognize the inherent dignity that they hold.
And like you were saying earlier, the relationship itself, for what it was and what it may be at some point in the future, maybe with some new boundaries and new guardrails, but there's that space between us also has its own dignity. I think one of the things I've seen is people heal. They start to be able to see the good in the difficult relationship. They start to see the good in the difficult person. They start to see the good parts of that difficult time of their life. So that's where the complexity you were talking about earlier, I think, plays out.
That's one of the things that I'm most excited about as we come into season two, because it's one of the areas that I still have so much growth to explore for my own personal well-being, is how to navigate boundaries versus love, and how the reclamation of dignity also allows me to maintain that dignity.
Ah, that's perfect. So as you're talking about love, I'm thinking about what Megan said. Love is the thing that sustains me. And she describes going through sort of an energy depleting space at work, time at work with some difficult, challenging situations. And she said, I forgot that I do things for love. And when she was able to remember that, love was sustaining her. And this was in the context of talking about dignity of everybody in our world and also her own dignity.
Doesn't that just light you up? Coming back to the concept that love is the core of everything that we do when we are in these spaces. And so no matter how often you see hurt in yourself, in the world, in culture, in the workplace, in war, no matter how much of it you see, that core is still there. And for me, Megan really brought that point home. The idea that if you find yourself getting lost in the weeds, if you find yourself getting pulled down by all of the violations of dignity, once you can see them, once you can name them, take a step back. Love is there right at the core of everything. And if you come back to that place, you can come back in and start to wage those battles anew with a refreshed passion that comes from a place of beauty.
Yeah, that's pretty profound. I asked a lot of our guests if they had one wish for our listeners, what would it be? I thought it would be fun to share a few of the wishes that our guest shared with our listeners. Ari really cracked me up. I said, what's one wish you had for our listeners? And he said, well, my wish is that this, meaning our podcast, is helpful. And if they want that, it will be productive for them. And then Rachel said, the very next episode, if I could encourage all of us to do one thing, it is to change the story we tell ourselves about ourselves in a way that cannot immediately be reduced to a productivity measure. So Ari used productivity, but made it more of an invitation, right? If they want that, it will be productive. And Rachel said, and we're more than just productivity measures. And then, of course, you quoted Megan. I asked her what was one wish she had for our listeners, and she said, applause berries. For anybody who hasn't listened to Megan's episode, you have to go back and find out what applause berries is all about. And then she continued, ushering you home to a place of great love and peace and comfort and rest, and applause pulling you back out into a world that needs you to do the exact thing you're designed to do with great love and service. Do you have a wish for our listeners, Vanessa?
You know, I'm actually going to go back to what Rachel said for a second. The concept of changing the story, if I had a wish for our listeners, it would be, and it's a wish for myself too, I am a listener. I hope to always be able to rewrite my own story so that I am constantly progressing towards the version of myself that I most wish to be. And that's my wish for our listeners. Jennifer, if you had one wish for our listeners, what would that wish be?
I would like people to feel their own worth and to act as if they have worth and to treat others as if they have worth. And my other wish, of course, is that they come back and listen to season 2.
Me too.
Vanessa, this was awesome. This was so great talking with you, Vanessa.
I had a great time, and I've had a great time producing this show.
Oh, it's been wonderful. And I love this time we had together today just to sit and think together about what we've heard this season.
Thank you.
So I'm curious, if you're listening to this conversation between me and Vanessa and you've been listening to the Dignity Lab, what about you? Do you have a favorite episode? What are your key takeaways from this season? I'm wondering, have you had an experience in which you discovered dignity like so many of our guests? Do you have a favorite element of dignity? We'd love to hear from you. And if you have a dignity dilemma or a story about how you reclaimed your dignity, we'd love to have you on the show. You can, of course, choose to be anonymous. You can reach us on our website with comments or questions or to come on the show at our website, www.thedignitylab.com. We'll see you soon. If you enjoyed this podcast, please rate and review us and share with someone you know. This helps us build our audience. And if you leave a review and send a screenshot to jennifer@jennifergriggs.com, we'll send you a small gift.
This has been the Dignity Lab with Dr. Jennifer Griggs. If you have experienced a dignity violation or have a dignity dilemma and want to be a guest on our show, contact us through our website, www.thedignitylab.com. Guests may remain anonymous. And if you're a leader wanting to uplevel your leadership with a small community of like-minded people, please visit our website to learn more about our group program for leaders. Our website also has free downloadable resources. More information about our guests can be found in each episode's show notes. This season of the Dignity Lab is produced by me, Vanessa Aaron. Pete Carty is our audio engineer and sound designer. Casey Frenette is our executive assistant, and Chase Miller composed our theme music. This podcast is for educational purposes only and is not a substitute for professional advice, diagnosis, or treatment. The content discussed is intended to explore and raise awareness about dignity. Sensitive topics may be discussed that could evoke strong emotions, so discretion is advised. Listeners are encouraged to engage with the material with empathy. Remember, be gentle with yourself. You are a child of the universe, no less than the trees and the stars.